if you hire people who want to do the work, especially something like cold calling, not everybody loves doing it. It's going to take somebody who can hate something and still be willing to pick up the phone every day and do it. I broke it down into having the skill to do something and the will to do something.
Hello, welcome to Heart Inspired, a show dedicated to highlighting individuals in their pursuit of authentic leadership, peeling back the layers to uncover the roadblocks they face, explore some of the actions they take, and what keeps them on track to continue their journey to be the best version of themselves. It is my hope that you will be inspired by their stories and gain some insights to help you in your own journey. I'm your host, Michelle Delgado.
When it comes to sales, some people are naturally designed to be in this role. Perhaps the career of selling chose them as much as they chose it. We cannot remain stuck in this is how it's done, or we've been doing it this way for years, with no plan to change. As a famous Greek philosopher once said, change is the only constant. When selling, we need to be mindful of our consumers' needs, their time, and competitors. Whether we are selling from B2B or B2C, it's important to be aware of what will resonate. In this series, my guests will share their journey and provide insights and perhaps inspire to review your sales technique so that you can continue to be successful. Chris Ciccioni is a sales professional with nearly 15 years of experience. He has a passion for building and growing teams. Throughout his career, Chris has been an individual contributor to leading teams, the majority of the time working with HR professionals, providing both software and recruiting solutions. Part of what has kept Chris engaged with sales for so long is the ability to be creative and use a variety of mediums, from video, direct mail, and content creation to the classics of cold calling and email. In today's episode, we will hear more about Chris's approach when it comes to old-fashioned cold calling. Welcome my guest, Chris Ciccioni. Welcome, Chris. So nice to see you here again on Zoom.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I've been so excited, looking forward to doing this since we first had our chat.
Networking is such an amazing thing, meeting you on LinkedIn. You know, this series that we're doing now is all about selling. And I was asking around some folks and looking for someone who still does cold call selling. And so that is an area that I'm interested to hear more about. I don't like selling. I don't feel like I'm a natural seller, even though we all sell in some way, shape, or form. So I'm really interested to hear about your journey in selling and why cold call selling and what are some of the misnomers that we have about it.
Absolutely. I think it's so funny that you started with, you know, I was looking to network with somebody who still does cold call selling. I was like, wow, how things have changed, and talking about, you know, my journey in sales. And I didn't start that long ago. Like, I've been around for a dozen or so years, but it's even incredible how things have changed over that time span from when I first got into selling to sort of where we are today.
Yeah.
You mentioned, you know, not being a natural at it and things like that. So just to give you some context, when I told my parents I had gotten a sales job, they laughed at me.
Really?
I love them and they're very supportive normally, but they legitimately were, you know, thinking to themselves, you in sales, I'm not sure about that. So I don't know that I agree with the fact that there is a natural type of sales person. And I'll tell a bit more of my story, and I will, maybe that'll help shed some light. But
yeah,
I studied kinesiology in university. I did a specialization in athletic therapy. I had this dream that I would follow around professional sports teams and I would take care of their players, and I'd be that person running onto that field when somebody gets injured. And then I realized that being based in Canada, there is a handful of professional sports teams and way too many athletic therapists for all of them. I didn't know that there was another career path I wanted to take within that field. So I thought to myself, what kind of skills do I have? And I had worked in retail pretty much my whole, you know, university path and schooling and all that. So I said, yeah, I could probably do this whole sales thing, thinking that, you know, selling shoes at the local sports store was anything similar to actually selling B2B. but yeah, learned that one the hard way. Regardless, I started interviewing at different places. I got all those crummy interviews, the sales jobs that are, you know, no base salary, all commission, or the training was, here's a phone book, figure it out, that kind of stuff.
Wow. And
I was thinking to myself, you know, I've taken exactly zero business classes my entire life, so I might need a bit more training than that. managed to get a referral to a company, Aerotech. They're a staffing company, and jumped in there. They preached, you know, bringing people in, hiring character over competency, which is something I still carry with me to this day, and that whole piece. So jumped in, recruited for a little bit less than a year as I was going through kind of the sales training and all that. And I think that's where my love, I use the term loosely, love of cold calling started. Because at that time, LinkedIn was a thing, but it was used mainly to connect with people to then immediately send them some sort of pitch that they would never respond to. emails were there. It was a thing you sort of did, but it was really, you know, 90% of your selling was done over the phone. And even at that time, I found that the style of cold calling was very different. One of my peers called it the bulldozer method. It was pick up the phone and just say like, hey, Michelle, you want to meet with me? I do this. Let's go. that was the extent of my cold calling strategy was hi, pretty please, please meet with me. So that has changed over the years, but I spent nearly 10 years at Aerotech, ended up, you know, growing a team, starting a division in Canada that did professional services, continued to develop my skills there, and then made a jump over to the SaaS world where I sold an HRIS system. And that's where my next kind of realization around cold calling happened, because it was a very different space. You know, cold calling for me was still just that way to get immediate feedback from somebody.
Yeah.
So did that there for a little bit, then was approached by Visier, where I'm at right now, a people analytics organization. And they knocked on my door and talked about people analytics. And I said, that's funny, because I'm selling an HR solution right now, and everybody keeps asking me about our analytics solution, which we did not have. So it just seemed like a natural progression of what was going on right now. And right now I manage a team of a dozen business development representatives, and their job is doing that initial cold outreach. So that has just continued to fuel my passion for cold calling and doing that cold outreach. But for me, that's been one big piece that I've continued throughout my career, is just that, you know, how important it is to be able to build pipeline, to be able to book those meetings, to be able to get out in front of people, and the creativity that is allowed in that space. And I think that's why I love the BDR space right now, is that, you know, you go on LinkedIn and you network with people and you see all the different options you have, all the different types of solutions, and how you weave them all together is really key. You know, you've got your calls, you've got your emails, you've got your LinkedIn, but you've got videos, you've got voice notes, you've got Sendoso or direct mail, postal, whatever you're using to send out gift cards, all kinds of stuff. You have in-person events, you have remote events. There are so many different tools you can use to be creative and go meet people where they're at. That I just love coming into work every day and chatting with these fairly, you know, junior folks, because I remember being there back at the beginning of my career and having people help me and guide me and teach me, that I just love coming into work and having those creative conversations and sending people on their way, just trying to do different things.
So you mentioned two things that I want to go back to, because it just sparked my ears. Mm-hmm. You mentioned character over competence. That's correct. So brilliant, because so many right now are still hire over skills versus character. Yeah. Competence versus character. It's pretty awesome.
It's actually funny. My most popular LinkedIn post ever, and it nearly reached, I think, 1 million impressions, which I was shocked.
Wow.
Right. Was literally saying that, like, hire character over competency and then train the rest. And half of the people were totally agreeing, saying this is brilliant. And then the other half were just absolutely tearing me down, saying that that is silly. Hire people who can do the job. So I think that, you know, for me, that's the way I was hired. And I really do preach paying it forward and giving other people the same opportunity. And I realized that, yeah, okay, if you're hiring a doctor, maybe you want somebody who's, you know, done their med school. But, you know, for me, in the space I'm in, if you hire people who want to do the work, especially something like cold calling, to your point at the beginning of our chat, not everybody loves doing it. So it's going to take somebody who can hate something and still be willing to pick up the phone every day and do it. So I took character over competency, and then I broke it down into having the skill to do something and the will to do something.
Brilliant.
I can't make you pick up the phone, But if you are picking up the phone, I can sit next to you and coach you on what you're saying when you're on the phone. So yeah. If you bring the will, I can help with the skill part. So that's been kind of my leadership mentality when it comes to hiring and developing folks. As long as you're bringing the effort and the drive, we can guide that into the right direction.
So what is the misnomer about cold calling? I mean, we think of like what you said in the very beginning, here's my product, pretty please, you know, buy from me. And does it have a new definition, a new picture, if you will, cold calling? As we think of like, you know, when they used to sell encyclopedias at your door. Well, I'm really dating myself, but you know what I mean? It's that, hello, we have something for you. What's the misnomer about that?
It's funny you talk about selling encyclopedias at doors and things like that, because I was talking about all the different options you have in your tool bag to go, you know, sell. And this applies a little bit less so now in the SaaS space because you're covering larger territories. But, mm-hmm. you know, when I was in staffing, my territory was drivable within 45 minutes to an hour. So if you weren't getting somebody on the phone, you just go knock on their office door and be like, hi, I have donuts. Do you want to meet with me?
Food always works, right?
I would like to think so. Definitely better than here. I brought some encyclopedias. Do you want them? Mm-hmm. But like to go back to the cold calling piece, I think that times have changed so much in the way of just all the different tools that folks have access to. So cold calling, it sucks. I'll put it out there. I consider myself to be very unique in the sense that I don't mind doing it. I really don't mind picking up the phone and getting, you know, shut down. I volunteered to do it with my team.
Tough skin from rejection. Is that what it is?
I'll go with tough skin, or I just have a very good coping mechanism. We're getting a bit sidetracked, but I'll talk about the story anyway. Something we used to do, we would cold call in groups. So we get, you know, three or four people together in the boardroom. Everybody brings their phone and just starts calling people. And if somebody shut you down, you hang up the phone. And I don't want to say you say anything nasty about them, but you'd come back and go, well, fine. I don't want to meet with you anyway. That's okay. Sure, no problem.
You're a loss.
Yeah, exactly. Who wouldn't want to meet with me? I'm awesome. So you find,
I think you are.
Thanks, Michelle. I appreciate that. But yeah, you just find different ways of coping. And I think for me, just sitting there and like taking it on the chin and saying, well, the next one will be better, that never really worked for me. So I would much rather be standing up and walking around, or like I said, having some fun with some other people and getting them to you know, get us all riled up and get a good attitude going there. But anyway, back to your question about misnomer around cold calling.
All good.
You know, I think that for me, the biggest change I've learned over my sales career is really moving away from a transactional nature. Mm. And I think that when we talk about cold calling, a lot of people think, I need to call you. I need to say hi. Book a meeting with me. And if I didn't get a meeting from you, I failed. I had an old colleague who he would get very frustrated with cold calling because it's the one activity you have where like I can spend 2 hours sitting there cold calling and not speak to a single person. Right. And then you feel like you wasted 2 hours of time. And with people working remote more, working from home, not everybody has an office. Like I don't have an office phone line. If somebody tried to call me, they would have to find my cell phone, which don't get me wrong, with the world of Zoom info and everything else right now, it's very doable, but things have changed from that perspective. But I don't like looking at it as, okay, I spent 2 hours calling people and I didn't accomplish anything. Everything right now is, to me at least, built off of building familiarity with your prospects. And so leaving a voicemail, that's great. You have an opportunity to leave your voice for a prospect.
Right.
And maybe I'm unique and I do things differently than some other folks. I don't think I do, but a lot of people, they see a phone number or a phone call come in. They don't recognize the number. They don't answer it. Sure, no problem. Goes to voicemail. I always check my voicemail. I want to make sure it's not something important. My doctor's office calling. I don't know. I'm going to check the voicemail. So you do have an opportunity to leave a voice note that somebody's very likely to listen to. So what are you trying to accomplish in that voicemail? Mm-hmm. Are you trying to get them just to get to know you a little bit more? Are you trying to get them to be redirected back to maybe their email? You know, hey, I left you, or I don't even bother calling me back. You don't need to. Don't worry about that. I'm not going to make that ask of you. I actually just sent you an email. Just take a look when you get a second. It's mm-hmm. titled this, something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's about building an experience to me. I recently hired one of our BDRs. He had come from the service industry, and he was working at the Cheesecake Factory, and it was the only one in Canada. And so there would be lineups out the door because people wanted to experience this Cheesecake Factory thing that was, you know, very prevalent on TV and whatever else. So he was saying, like, look, people are waiting hours to come eat here. It's my job to give them an experience when they come in. I want to make sure that they leave here feeling like, hey, that was worth it. And I think that same mentality applies to prospecting. It's not just about a transaction. Oh, I didn't get an answer to this cold call. I clearly failed. Not really. You're continuing to build familiarity. So they get an email, they don't respond. That's fine. We've got all the technology now. I saw that they opened it. Okay, cool. So they opened it. They saw your message. They saw your name. Maybe they read two lines, deleted. Okay, fine. Now they get a voicemail. They hear your voice. Maybe you send them a video on LinkedIn. Well, now they have your face and it's moving. Now, next time you call them, maybe they say, hey, I saw Chris's name last time. Oh, this Chris guy's calling me. All right, I'll pick up this time. They start to feel almost like they get to know you by building that familiarity. It's part of the reason why I love building my brand on my personal brand on LinkedIn. So if somebody that I connect with will start seeing my posts and go, oh, I feel a little bit closer to this person. I feel like I trust them a little bit more. I feel like I know them a bit better. They're more likely to pick up that call. So for me, it's all about a process. And if you think of a call as a transaction that either you win or lose because you got a meeting or you didn't, to me, it's a lot more than that. It's really about building out a process that you're trying to accomplish. And calling is one tool that you have, but that's just one aspect of what you're using. And you want to make sure it all complements each other. It's not, okay, an email, then I make a separate phone call, then I make a separate video, then I make a separate connection on LinkedIn. It all needs to tie together. It all needs to be an experience, and it needs to build to that point where your prospect goes, hey, you know what? This person's been persistent. They sent me some good information. They seem really, really nice in their voicemails. Let me have a conversation with this person.
Yeah. So when you are doing that, because some of the things that, you know, when you are hanging out on LinkedIn as much as you or I am doing, you get a lot of, you know, people sliding into your DM and or your inbox and wanting to outline their solution, outline what their products are, and then can we have a call? And they have not done any homework as to who I am or what I may need. Are you, when you're doing that, are you immediately offering or outlining what you can do for them? Or is it more about a relationship?
I think, again, you're talking different tools, and I think they all have different aspects that you can leverage and that they are better at accomplishing. And I think LinkedIn is much better at building relationships.
Okay.
You're not going to build a relationship off of a cold call typically, because you have about 15 seconds to say something mildly interesting. Otherwise, you're toast. But LinkedIn, I think personally, LinkedIn should be approached a lot more casually. I think it should be, and much like email right now, it should be really about the person you're reaching out to. So saying, hi, we do this. I'm like, you know, dude, I'm not interested, because to your point, I get a whole bunch of them saying like, we do this. I'm like, that's fantastic. Am I the right person? Do I care? Does this make any sense? No, to your point, they may have done a variety of different amount of research. And my pet peeve while we're talking about that is people who do research and look at your profile and go, oh, hi, Chris, I noticed that you are blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Now, here's a completely unrelated statement about my company. Like, that's great. You're personalizing just so you can show that you read my profile, not because it ties in to anything that you're doing or makes any sense whatsoever. So it becomes very inauthentic. And I think, you know, that honesty, that authenticity is so important when you're doing anything from cold calling to cold outreach in any way, shape, or form.
So when you do that cold call, and your initial is to build an experience or build some, is it credibility or trust, without really talking about your product?
You have to establish yourself pretty quickly as, I don't want to say an expert in the space, because I think that Like, I lead a team of BDRs, as wonderful as they are, and even the account executives that I work with. Like, you cannot be a professional salesperson and a professional people analytics expert. Like, you pick your craft, and you know, we're very good at doing part of the job, and we have partners that we bring in to do different pieces. We have thought leaders, we have all kinds of resources to use. So you need to be you need to show that you're up to speed with what's going on within the industry, within the space. And, you know, typically you'll want to look for some sort of trigger moment that would make sense to tie back to what, you know, we do. So an example at Vizier, we're very good at bringing people data all together into one spot. So if an organization has recently gone through a merger or an acquisition, well, you're working off of two different systems right now. How do you get them all together? How do you get that in one place so you can make an educated decision based on people in company X, people in company Y? Well, if I see that an organization has gone through some sort of merger, I can start with, hey, congrats on acquiring company X. Now I'm talking about you. We're talking about what you do. Mm-hmm. How's that going? How does that affect you? Anything of that nature. So you're asking about them. And then you can tie in afterwards. Oh, okay. That's interesting. You're saying that you're having challenge XYZ. We've actually done similar work with this company because they've gone through the same thing. So it's really finding that trigger moment that allows you to start with them and then tie in what you do afterwards. Because, like, at the end of the day, people love talking about themselves. People love talking about what they do. People love that, especially when they are passionate about whatever they're doing. And if you are calling an HR professional, in my experience of doing it for, you know, 10 plus years, they love their job and they love the people that they work with and they love their contribution to the organization. And a lot of times in my mind, they're some of the unsung heroes of organizations. So when you are able to, you know, help them share their story, they're feeling really good about it. And you can get some good information that allows you to come back and, you know, really understand if you can help them.
Yeah.
And I think that's that last piece that's important is just being authentic about that, is not saying, hey, I don't know, I don't care, but I swear I can solve all of your world's problems. Just like, come to me. It's understanding, you know what? We just had a conversation and it might be a 3-minute cold call conversation, but you know what? I don't really think I can help you with anything right now. Do you mind if I just shoot you over some information, maybe invite you to an event if we do one in your neck of the woods and we can keep in touch should things change?
Yeah. Like,
that ability to say no, this probably isn't actually relevant, can make an impact as well.
Something you said, you know, hey, if it makes sense, or do we have a solution? You know, two things that I've learned is that, well, throughout the years, is patience, and you have to build the trust, but you have to give them choices, because people don't want to be with their back up against the wall with only one solution. Because even if it's the best solution for them, if they're feeling defensive, they're going to walk away and you've lost them, right? Would you say that's a fair assessment?
100% completely and totally agree. When I started selling, the training was always, don't give them an option. Don't give them a yes or no question. If you tell them, and to a certain degree, some of the psychology behind it sort of makes sense. People will, again, often look for like the easiest way out. So if I give them a yes or no, even if they are interested, there's a like this default reaction to say, if I say no, I get myself out of this conversation and can go back to doing what I was doing. So I'll just say no.
Right.
So it was very much, you know, don't ask them if they want to meet, ask them when they are available to meet.
Yeah.
Or give them that, you know, people make enough decisions during their day. Don't let them choose when they're available. Ask them, is this time good for you?
Yeah.
But I think, and part of what I love right now, and this is my like science nerd background coming back, is that you have organizations like Gong for calls, Lavender for emails. They've gone back and done all the math on what combination of words will allow you to book more meetings. And right now, a lot of it is very much like you were saying, that very open, very low pressure type of interaction. So it's, is this worth exploring?
Yeah.
Would you want to continue this conversation? You know, is it worth taking a few minutes to chat about this? Do you see value in it? It just very, very casual, very light, very much the opposite of what at least I, and I think a lot of other salespeople were taught, where you go in hard, you don't give them options, you kind of force them into this meeting.
Yeah.
and you take away those options. And yeah. I think that a lot of that has changed recently, where now we're having a lot more of that more casual approach. Because like you said, people want to have that option. They want to be able to say, you know what, this interests me. Let's talk about it a bit more, even though I don't think it's the right fit. But now I know more about the organization. I can come back to you. I can refer you to a friend. They're a lot more open to just having that networking conversation. And if us meeting on LinkedIn was not clear enough to show the power of just networking with people and keeping those options open.
Absolutely. One of the things you and I talked about is, you know, data and analytics and you know, how that should be accompanied with emotion in making decisions.
Yes.
And so think of that. And then with your own team, are you using, you're using data and analytics on their performance to some degree. So how do you measure that along with your emotion for your own team's performance?
Oh, that's an excellent question. You know, I think there's this weird balance that you need to achieve when you're leading a team, especially a sales team. And that's because at the end of the day, you know, those numbers are king, right? That outcome is king. And I think that there's a couple different aspects that tie into that. So I'm a big proponent of like, look, you the outcomes need to be there. You have a job here as a BDR, for example, at Visier. Your goal is to build pipeline. If you are not building pipeline for the organization, we have a problem, because that is what you are here for. From an emotional side, that's where I tie back into the skill versus will part. If the person is putting in the effort, and I see that, and I'm having conversations, and I see that, you know, we're progressing and moving forward, I'm absolutely willing to give them a little bit more leeway. But even some of that, I say emotion, but in reality, I can look at the numbers. I'm not one to lead and say, well, you need to make 100 phone calls today and 1,000 emails today and all that. I'm not like that. If you can get the outcome, I'm cool with it. Making 3 phone calls in a week is probably not good enough. So we can have some conversations around that. But if you're putting in the effort, and again, a lot of times that effort is determined by, let me look at some of the numbers. Let me look at what you are doing.
Yeah.
So it's finding that balance between, hey, I can clearly see you're putting in the work. Maybe you're not quite there yet, and that's fine. Let's get you there. But that goes back to that, again, that analytics side, and then determining, all right, do I feel like you're putting in the effort? Do I feel like you are driving forward? Do I feel like you're putting in that effort? And if I feel like that's happening and the numbers sort of back that up, then I'm willing to give people the extra time necessary to go get the job done. Because, you know, part of it too, and part of the reason I love sales, and you talked before about how, you know, maybe cold calling is not your thing or your style or what you feel like your strong suit is, but everybody has their own different style. You know what, I don't make 150 cold calls in a week. That's fine. I make 50, but they're perfectly placed because I'm sending emails, I'm making videos, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. So when I call somebody, I feel really good about it. And I have other BDRs who, you know, love the phone, and they're making 150, 200 calls in a week, and they're booking meetings that way. So that's part of the reason why I think there needs to be a little bit of that, we say emotion, but maybe more of just that looking at a human as a human and not a bunch of numbers and going, you know what? I know that person X is really good with this. If they lean a bit more towards LinkedIn interactions and a bit away from cold calling, that's okay. And if somebody else is leaning the other way, that's fine too, as long as we're continuing to grow, progress, and start to build that pipeline.
That's awesome. So when you are measuring your team, obviously, you know, you mentioned numbers are king and everything else. Being and then having the data and the emotion, do you ever come across somebody who they really feel like this is the job for them, they want to succeed, and just you just know in your heart of heart they're not designed for that type of role? Do you then look at, would they be better fit because of their personality, their other skill sets, for another position within the company? And so you're shifting people in that sense?
So that is, that's part of the reason why I really enjoy hiring junior folk, because for the most part, and I won't talk about anybody else because I think that's mean. I'll talk about myself, because that's where I was at that point, where like, I don't want to know what I want to do with my life. I wanted to be in sales because I thought that was a good way for me to make a decent amount of money based on the fact that I wasn't going to use my university degree. So, you know, I hire folks who come in and I don't blame them for thinking, hey, I heard you can make money in SaaS sales, so I wanted to do that, but I don't even know if that's really what I want. So, I absolutely, you know, have those conversations and just understand, you know, is this, we used to call them, no religious affiliation, but we used to call them come to Jesus moments, where you would sit down with somebody and say like, hey, is this really for you? Are you enjoying yourself, or are you just hating every single day because you have to call people? and sometimes that's what it takes. It takes a little bit of a shake to go, hey, is this really what you want to be doing? And that's where sometimes they'll come back. And to your point, they'll say, hey, no, this is it. I want to do this. I want to get good at it. And others go, yeah, you know what? I'm not exactly loving this.
Yeah.
And so my goal there is always to understand, well, what do you love? What do you want to do? Is there opportunity internally? But for me, that still goes hand in hand with, that's cool that you want to do this. And I encourage you to start having conversations about what it would take to get there. But at the end of the day, we still need to figure out how to get you to a, you don't need to be a superstar in the role, but you need to get the job done, because I can't refer you to somebody else and say, oh, this person's great, take them, because you're not where you need to be. So I think there is a minimum level where you still need to contribute and show that you can get the job done while working towards saying, hey, you know what? I don't want to be an account executive. I want to go to product marketing, or I want to go be a solutions consultant, or I want to go be in field marketing, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
I think that's great. And that gets me really excited, because heck, I'd love to see a BDR in every department at Vizier. I'm happy with them bouncing around. It just comes down to understanding what they want and having that honest reflection of what they want to be doing. And that's not always easy when you're 6 months into your first professional role ever.
Do you sell it when you have some of these junior team members or employees, when they get that first win, when they get that first call, and, you know, is there celebration? Does it kind of take them over the hump there when they've, you know, been climbing up and having that frustration of a lot of no's, and then all of a sudden they get that first appointment?
I want to celebrate everything. I will first meeting they book, first time that their meeting turns into an opportunity, first time it becomes a sales accepted opportunity, when they are hitting their goals for their first quarter. As much as I can, I want to celebrate things. And I think I'm still trying to properly adapt to working remotely, because I do find that a bit more of a challenge. Being able to sit in a room with the rest of your team makes that celebration a lot easier when you can physically high five and
at
a gong and doing all kinds of stuff like that. So, you know, we're trying to do different things. We're trying to, you know, use different tools to be able to do some of that. But absolutely, like, celebrate every win. I've even told a lot of the BDRs who work closely with their account executives, like, sometimes somebody finally opening an email after you've like called them and emailed them for months on end, and they finally open something, you're like, that's a win. We're going to celebrate that. You send a Slack to your account executive. Yes, they opened the email. No, they didn't respond, but it's better than nothing.
Exactly. Celebrate every little win towards that goal.
Everything. I have some of my team messaging me saying, hey, I got to talk to this person today. They refused to meet with me, but I talked to them. And I was like, that's great. And then we can also dive in and dissect, well, what did you say? What did they say? What's the game plan? What's the next step? So you can get into some of the more tactical stuff, but at the same time, don't take away from, that was great, let's keep doing more of that. Because again, that's a step in the right direction, right? It's progress.
It is. It's progress for sure. So Chris, this has been great. I want to ask you, what are some of your goals that you can share with us, as far as whether it's a sales goal or, like you said, you know, somebody, oh, I want to buy my first house. What are some of the things that you strive for?
Ooh, so for me personally, I'll talk professionally and then I'll talk personally.
Sure.
So for me, you know, I joined Vizier about a year ago and kind of got, I don't want to say free reign, because I don't want to take away what the BDR team was doing at the time. They just needed a little bit more help and structure and a little bit of love.
Yeah.
So I was able to come in and put some stuff in place to allow the team to grow. And I mean, we're still working towards a path to become an account executive. We've got, you know, some great opportunities for them to move into like team lead roles and leadership roles and stuff like that. So like, I want to get that ironed out. I think that, like I said before, you know, being able to hit your goal as a BDR and hit your numbers and make money. Like, that's great and all, but let's talk about what you want to do next in your career. Because the average person, they're don't get me wrong, there are a few lifelong BDRs and they're fantastic at what they do, taking nothing away from them. But a lot of people want to move on to maybe whatever it is that is next. So for me, on a professional side, I want to make sure that the BDRs are enabled to be able to go and do that. So okay, that for me is a big part of it.
That's great.
Yeah. And so for that, that's my professional side. And again, it ties into my personal side, as a lot of stuff has changed over time. And I went from being, you know, a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed 20-something-year-old starting in sales to being a few years older than that. So for me, you know, coming into the role of Vizier and putting in a lot of effort to kind of build some structure out and build some of that leadership capacity to have other leaders come in and help me manage the team, which I think is important because we're up to 12 BDRs and that's a lot for one person to take on.
Wow.
But so personally, well, I mean, first off, I said it's not always about money, but I am getting married in a month. So, you know, paying for a wedding is always helpful.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so much. But for me after that, you know, the plan is to want to start a family and want to be able to have built something on the professional side that gives me the structure where, you know, if I am on paternity leave or if the kid is sick and I'm stepping away from work, that I feel really good about the team that I have in place to be able to handle everything so that I can focus on the things that are important to me. So yeah. Creating that, I hate the term work-life balance because that makes me feel like it should be on a scale and it should be perfectly equal. But I think
that's very interesting you say that. I feel the same way. It's like one should be, you know,
an old leader of mine said work-life equilibrium, which is like a lot less catchy.
Yeah, it's a longer word.
Yeah, but basically what he said was, you know what? It's having the flexibility to be able to say, hey, I need to spend an extra minute at work today. And that's okay, because tomorrow I'm going to spend less time and I'm going to come back and make sure that I'm ready for, you know, dinner with the family or something. So it's just knowing and feeling good about having that give and take. Where when you need to double down, hey, I'm able to do that. I'm able to double down on whatever I need to accomplish today. And once that's done, you know what? I'm going to be able to step away a little bit and make sure that I'm there to take little Timmy to school tomorrow morning or whatever it may be.
Not a little Chris or Christine.
I mean, I've never been one to you know, pass too many names down. I get creative.
Well, that is awesome. I wish you all the best. And when's the wedding?
October 15th. So almost exactly a month from the time we were recording this.
Wow. That's great. Well, I wish you all the best. Have an amazing wedding. Are you going off to a fabulous place for a honeymoon too?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So my fiance works for Air Canada. So we have a little bit in when it comes to travel. So our honeymoon is going to be in Fiji.
How nice. Well, your team will have to take care of the reins while you're gone, because I'm sure you're going more than just 7 days.
Oh, yeah. They're going to have to sort themselves out for 2 weeks. My phone is going to be off. So as long as I come back and the building isn't burnt down, I will be perfectly happy with whatever the outcome is.
Well, this has been great, Chris. Thank you so much for enlightening me on cold call selling and all of your successes as a leader. And your company sounds amazing. So I'm glad that you are doing well in your position and your team is very lucky to have you. So I wish you all the best and thank you so much for being a guest here.
I appreciate that so much. And I'm always happy to come run my mouth about anything sales or leadership related. So I really do appreciate you having me here. This was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Tune in next week. Thank you for listening to Heart Inspired. I'm your host, Michelle Delgado, and don't forget to lean in, be heard, and be inspired. This podcast was created by Heart Metrics Consulting, editing and co-produced by David Castle Productions, and co-distributed by Business Travel 360. For more information about Heart Metrics Consulting, visit us at heartmetrics.com.